Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra, Champions League quarterfinals. After drama at the Parc des Princes, the Potters, is Mourinho the new Maggie? Formerly charismatic leader who goes down badly at Palace and in Paris, blames everything on strikers and, bit of a stretch this, Torres will end up getting sick of him. Meantime, have that, Skywriters. David Moyes sends out his own plain message with a mighty draw against Bayern. But can he do it again in Munich? We round up all the midweek news, marvel at Barcelona's clash with Atleti and FIFA's Catalan transfer ban, then have a look forward to the weekend's action, especially Everton, Arsenal and Andy Carroll against the team that didn't want him. All that and more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hey everyone, should be a very special pod today because there's some great football to talk about and some great people to do the talking. Paul Doyle's here.
Hi James.
Hi Paul, how are you doing?
Yeah, all right.
All right then.
How about you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad actually.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, James Horncastle, how are you on the all right stakes?
Great Jimbo, right? Very good today.
Woof. And Barry, 1 to 10, how are you feeling?
8.
Really? Any reason for that in particular?
No. I thought I was worried Ed Miliband might be in today's podcast because he was in Big Paper Towers doing morning conference this morning.
Was that related to them insulting him on the cover of the supplement?
I don't know if that was an unfortunate coincidence or not, but he turned up anyway and didn't storm off in a huff when he saw the cover of G2,
which
was suggested that, well, it was basically how can he be turned into less of a geek?
Right.
But he probably knows he's a geek, I'd imagine.
Right. Okay. Well.
But it was stuffed full of people.
Mm.
We were discussing whether people are actually there because they're interested in what he has to say or if they're there because they want to be seen taking an interest and being there.
Ed Miliband, of course, the shadow leader, the leader of the opposition. In Great Britain. If he wants to walk in... You know, we're here. But in the meantime, we'll just press ahead and talk about some absolutely terrific action midway. There were good quarterfinals, no? Paul, were you excited? I know you got...
Well, I only saw that what might have been the worst one of them, which was Real against Dortmund, which unfortunately was a mismatch due to Dortmund missing most of their best players. So Real had a very comfortable win. Although, when Dortmund did slightly improve in the second half... frailties in Real's defence were partially exposed, and if Lewandowski, for example, had been available for rather than Aubameyang, who had a terrible off day and scuffed every shot, then Dortmund might have got an away goal or two to make the tie interesting. As it stands, it's highly unlikely that they will progress, especially as Royce picked up a yellow card last night, so he'll be missing as well from the next leg.
Poor old Jurgen Klopp. I noticed one of the Spanish papers this morning saying, high decimo, the tenth is on. Was it the kind of performance that makes you think, their name's on the cup?
No, I wouldn't go that far. It's hard to judge because Dortmund were so weakened. But as I say, Real did look very vulnerable in defence. So better teams could have exploited that. But of course, on the counter-attack, they attack with devastating speed and penetration with the BBC. And so they will be dangerous opponents to anyone, obviously.
Good. Well, we ticked the Real Borussia box. So let's move on now to events at the Parc des Princes. And whether are we witnessing a bit of a kind of a collapse of a Chelsea season there here, James?
Well,
they've already given in the league. There's no way they're going to win this, and we have that on high authority. Can they come back from this 3-1 defeat in Paris?
Well, everyone is citing the example of Napoli in when they won the Champions League. But I think this PSG side is much better than that Napoli team, particularly at the back. Yeah, what surprised me about PSG is how quickly they've taken to European football. I know Leonardo, their former director of sport now, said that they were perhaps better suited to it than they were to the league. But this group of players together, of playing together, don't have a lot of experience in the Champions League. As individuals, they do. But they already look like they could go all the way. I was impressed by them against Barca last season. I thought they were unlucky to go out on away goals. But in their first real test last night, they performed.
And what I didn't see the game last night, but what they have is the capacity to control matches, which Chelsea under Mourinho have always liked to do. But without Matic in midfield, and without, I think, Ramirez is suspended for the next leg, it's very difficult to see Chelsea being able to establish any kind of platform with which to get the three goals they need. They can always, you know, bundle the ball into net from set pieces and things like that, so they're not completely out of it. But PSG have to be strong favourites. Mm.
Well, they bundled the ball into the net from a set piece, of course, on Wednesday. It was their own net. You had David Luiz who had the own goal, as opposed to John Terry. John Terry limited himself to setting up Lavezzi for the opening goal.
Yeah,
and then there was some brilliant defending to allow Pastore's wildly creative final goal. And when you pair all these things together, it's natural then that Mourinho should be coming out and saying, I'm not happy with my strikers' performances. He doesn't have real strikers. The defenders, he says, have the right to make mistakes because we have other players who have made mistakes all season. Subtext, strikers. I'm concerned about the bullying that might be going on inside the Chelsea dressing room now, and I'm even more concerned now about this.
Well, Jose Mourinho is a bully, and that's what bullies do. They bully people, as Sir Alex Ferguson was the same. I mean, Mourinho, in common with Ferguson, is renowned for deflecting attention away from his players. But I think last night, he was badly at fault. His tactics were exposed. He got them wrong. And now he's deflecting attention elsewhere to take the heat off himself, possibly. Just a theory of mine.
What did he get wrong? Not starting with a striker, or what?
Well, that certainly didn't work. André Schürrle was playing. Was he a false nine? I'm never quite sure what a false nine is, but he was just wandering around the pitch, kind of Rooney style, but without any of the contribution you can expect from Wayne Rooney when he's doing that. He was never on the shoulder of the centre halves. Didn't give them an ounce of trouble. And I think it got to the stage in the first half that Mourinho had to sort of point and tell him where he wanted him to stand and where he wanted him to run. And if you're having to do that for your centre forward, then something's gone badly wrong. And, I mean, the dropping Torres, who hasn't been playing well but has done okay in the Champions League, it's going to be a hammer blow to his already fragile confidence. So If you drop him to the start, why bother bringing him on in the last half hour? Because he didn't. It was pretty unlikely he was going to do anything, and he didn't.
I wonder if Mourinho's famously robust confidence is taking any kind of blows at the moment, because as things stand, this season is on course to be a failure for him. He is not responsible for the problems that he inherited, insofar as he's always liked to have a strong backbone in his team, and he inherited a team with obvious deficiencies in it. But he has failed to repair them and improve the things that he inherited. And there was an assumption at the start of the season that, you know, due to Mourinho's magnetic presence and the cult of personality that he creates, he would be able to overcome these weaknesses, but he hasn't.
Well, it did look as though, for example, he made them more resolute in defence, and people were getting very excited about Cahill and Terry and their partnership. But and Azpilicueta,
Terry has had a better season this season than last season, and that's the one thing you can point to that is definitely improved.
Except in the last two games. Season,
yeah. Except in the last three games, and you know the fact that he hasn't been playing for England has probably helped in that as well. But other things haven't been addressed.
I've finally finished Sid's book, which is excellent. But the Mourinho sort of section was quite Mourinho Pep section was quite telling. I mean, we hear from Sid every week, or used to, about Mourinho and what he got up to. But he just does seem to occasionally go beyond, well beyond the boundaries of pantomime villain and just be really, really nasty. And I think what's worrying for Chelsea as well is that last night they were well beaten by a team that didn't play, I thought, particularly well for almost an hour. Cavani was very poor. Zlatan didn't have a good game. I think there was a suggestion he was carrying a back injury, and he ended up going off with what looked like a hamstring injury. And after they took the lead, they kind of retreated into their shell for at least 45 minutes. And then when I think they got a good talk into at half time and were more aggressive in the second half.
Well, Paul Doyle, you don't see Chelsea going turning this one around. James, you don't either?
No.
No? No? Just to remind us all, Ancelotti was sent on his way for coming second in the Premier League and exiting in the semi-finals of the Champions League. Prospect which may elude even that may elude a Mourinho at this point. We'll move on now, having riffed on Jose's pain rather satisfyingly for a little bit. They've got Stoke, of course, this weekend, a rampant Stoke. They're up in the top half, you know, the Potters. Four. And they beat Chelsea at the Britannia. Are they going to be at the wrong end of an angry Chelsea reaction, James?
I'm not sure. I mean, you'd hope
Chelsea
so.
Chelsea at home to Stoke? You're not sure?
Well, I mean, the pressure is really on because, obviously, yeah, they haven't got a fortnight between one leg and the other. So, to keep their title ambitions on track, they're going to have to get a result there and obviously going to PSG fresh and on form.
That's a very good point. There's a big correlation in Chelsea's defeats or lack of victories this season with when they're just about to be playing a Champions League game or when they just have, because the fact that Mourinho seems to be a little bit, maybe with his team selection, prioritising the European competition. So what he does at the weekend, I mean, I presume Ramirez will be playing because he can't midweek, but that's going to be interesting. In other Chelsea news, how about that report that the Dutch FA are busy probing Vitesse Arnhem after their former owner claimed that they had orders from London to lose games so that they wouldn't get into the Champions League because they're owned by Abramovich and you can't have two teams from the same owner in the same competition. Did you see that?
I wasn't aware of that. It's very
well, I think their ownership is unclear, isn't it? Is it the involvement? If Abramovich is involved, is unclear. Obviously, they look like a... appearances-wise, they look like a Chelsea satellite club in that they have so many loan players there. But you know, I think that's what the Dutch FA is seeking to clarify.
Right, OK, super. Let's move on then to the other Premier League side at action midweek. It was, of course, Man United, who hosted Bayern. A sensational result, surely, for United. People seem quite impressed to begin with, and then after one or two hours had trickled by, they were less impressed. Is that fair?
As hours have gone by, I'm more and more impressed, I think.
Are you? Good.
Yeah, because, I mean, I was surprised. I expected them to be beaten heavily. But David Moyes has done what Alex Ferguson could never do. He got a result against a Pep Guardiola side, you know.
Did he win a tactical battle with Pep?
Well, I mean, you can't blame him for the tactics that he used, I think. I thought United defended intelligently. I thought they broke intelligently. Had Danny Welbeck taken the chances presented to him, we might have been looking at a United win here, which would have been even
2-1 or even 3-1 had that first goal not been disallowed.
Absolutely. And I think the decision to disallow the first goal was very harsh because it was more a low head from, was it Javi Martinez, than a high boot from Danny Welbeck. So, I think they emerged from that with full credit. It was probably their best performance, even though it was a draw. I think it's their best performance of the season
for me. Do you think they can do this again there next week?
No. Barry? Although I do think they're going to have, it's going to be interesting to see what Bayern do, because obviously with Schweinsteiger suspended, Javi Martinez suspended, Thiago Alcantara injured, I mean, they do have options. You know, we've mentioned PSG's bench, but Bayern have quite the strength in depth. But it'll be interesting to see what Pep lineup he puts through.
I don't think they could do it, but I didn't think they could get a draw in that game either. A lot of people have been quite sniffy about the tactics they employed, saying it's really, you know, Manchester United team should be embarrassed to be set up like that against Bayern Munich at home, but they're the seventh best team in England, and Bayern Munich are arguably the best team in the world. So if you take them on at their own game, you're going to get thrashed. Mm. And it's not pretty to watch, but it's effective. And I think, you know, it's a good... I don't think you can say it's not a good result for them or a good performance.
Okay, well, Bayern Munich very much in crisis, going two games without winning for the first time since November 2012. Let's dial up Raphael Honigstein to see what he can make of it all, this collapse of the Bavarian powerhouses. Hi, Raphael Honigstein.
Hi, James Richardson.
Hi. Listen, Götterdämmerung, as you say there in Germany, eh?
Twilight of the Gods. Very
indeed.
Good. Very classical.
Mm.
I'm not sure it was a twilight for any of the gods present. I mean, David Moyes managed to buy some time for himself with a very creditable performance and was probably on his favourite terrain tactically, playing a sort of Everton-style game, and they did it really, really well.
Hmm. Okay. Well, Bayern, are they going to be happy with just one away goal? Was there not a little bit of soul-searching after this that they... We were making the point they could have lost this 2-1 or maybe even 3-1 had the first Welbeck goal stood and he taken the second one a bit better.
Yes. I mean, the Welbeck goal was scored once the referee had blown the whistle, so I'm not sure it's really that relevant. But I agree with you. I mean, they could have lost the game. They weren't at their best. They didn't create enough chances, and they weren't clinical enough when they did create chances. And that's all these things were mentioned. And Bayern, I think, had a tough time coming to terms with the team that was happy to concede the ball, to concede the space. And Manuel Neuer made the point that he compared him to Chelsea in 2012, where it's really solely down to Bayern to create something, and sometimes they struggle doing that. So I don't think that's necessarily a Pep problem or a Barcelona problem or a tiki-taka problem. It's a problem that you will have if the team is very, very deep and plays as well defensively as Man United did.
Mm.
Having said that, I think it shows you just how high expectations have become at Bayern, that a 1-1 draw at Manchester United is somehow seen as perhaps not a great result.
Mm.
The results have been so good with so few draws, and United's form, of course, hasn't been very impressive, that Bayern probably felt they should have done a little bit better, but it's still a very reasonable result. And I think in 11 prior times that they've had the same result, they've always gone through the second leg.
Absolutely right. 1-1 away on 11 previous occasions, they've gone through it all 11 times. This return leg then, I'm not sure if David Moyes will employ the same tactics, but were he to do so, what makes you think that Bayern are going to be any more successful in breaking him down or them down, especially since they're going to be without all sorts of midfielders? Thiago Alcantara already out, Martinez out, and Schweinsteiger as well for this next match.
Yeah, I think it was very interesting to look at Pep during the game. His arm movements were very extensive, and he was basically in sign language saying what Bayern should have done. And I think if you take those directions into the second leg, then Bayern would do a little bit better. He was complaining that the crosses weren't accurate enough. He was complaining that they didn't switch the flanks quickly enough. And in transition, when they won the ball and lost the ball, he thought that they didn't play it quickly enough. Now, Schweinsteiger will be a huge loss in terms of his persona, his presence, but he sometimes also has a tendency to slow the game down a little bit. So I don't think they'll actually miss him that much in the home leg. And I think one of the lessons that Guardiola will have learned is that he needs a striker, a proper striker to occupy that space, because it's all well if you have a false nine or somebody who plays in midfield, when there's lots of spaces to run into behind the back four, but there was no space. So I think there's no reason that Mandzukic wouldn't start. And Bayern will just try a little bit, perhaps a little bit less elaborate. But basically, the system doesn't change. I don't think there's a fault in the system. It just needs to be implemented better.
Rafa, one other thing. Toni Kroos, a lot of talk about his future. Rummenigge saying that he's definitely going to be at Bayern Munich next season. Is that your understanding?
No, it's not. There's actually a real difference between the perception of the situation outside Bayern Munich, where everyone says, of course, he's going to stay, they'd be crazy to let him go, and inside the club, where they're a lot more undecided. And it's been explained to me that they now see this as Kroos's chance over the next couple of weeks, especially in the Champions League, with that second leg as well, to show that he is worth the same kind of money that the so-called leaders or superstars inside the team command. So, you know, if he now really steps up and maybe scores a goal or does something very special to knock out United and then possibly perform well again in a possible semi-final, then I think they will be more persuaded to award him this new contract. But if he doesn't, if they feel that he is just another player then they're very reluctant to break their wage structure. That's really the main issue for them. They feel if Toni Kroos comes and says, I want this money at his age, then there is no good reason why the Alabas and the Müllers and the Boatengs of this team won't feel similar. And that's the real worry for them, and that's why they're a little bit reluctant.
All right, then. Thank you for that, Rafa.
Nothing on Dortmund?
I mean, unless it was anything you wanted to add?
Oh, there's just this thing with Klopp losing his rag in the TV studio.
What did he do?
I stormed out of the interview when a TV reporter asked him three questions about Lewandowski and also asked him whether this is effectively over, this tie.
Right.
Got very, very upset. He said, how can I say if it's over? How can I ask them to pay me any money if I say here this next game is over?
Right, yeah. Fair point.
Pep got quite chippy with our own Jamie Jackson.
Yeah, he did.
Look Although at me was, when I'm talking
was,
to
it
you.
Was, it was a deliver. It was delivered with a smile.
Yeah,
but a fairly icy smile.
Well, Jamie Jackson's got a history in Manchester. You remember he was chased by that exploding ticket
program
booth.
Kiosk.
Yeah, program kiosk.
And well. I don't think Roberto Mancini was a big fan of his.
Was he not? No.
And he's quite popular down around Portsmouth as well. Jamie. Right. Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
I can also tell you that Bayern were really, really upset with this dirty Schwein headline from the Daily Mirror.
Oh.
Yeah, don't know if you saw that.
I saw the headline. Why were Bayern so upset about it?
Well, because they think it's, you can't write that. I mean, you can say the team is shit or crap or whatever, but you can't insult somebody as a dirty pig, even if it is a misguided play on words.
Mm. All right, well, we apologise on the behalf of whatever.
No, you don't have to apologise.
Well, we'd like to anyway, though, Rafa. Anyway, thanks for that. We'll speak
don't
to you soon.
Don't ever apologise for anything, James.
Well, that's not a very good policy, is it, Rafa? Especially from a German, for goodness sake. All right, Rafa, super stuff. Speak to you soon.
Bye.
Raphael Honigstein. Well, Man United, of course, are at Newcastle at the weekend, which is perhaps perfect for the Moyes revival. A team like them that's pretty much given up in the league, don't
they? Yeah.
Shipped 7 goals in their last 2 games.
Yeah, well, their performance last Saturday was one of the worst I've ever seen from a Premier League team, so it's difficult to imagine them trying a leg this week either. They just don't seem to care anymore this season, which suppose that they're prerogative, they're safe. Mm. You know, their owner doesn't seem to care about.
Is this Newcastle we're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Well, it could apply to any number of teams.
Well, I was just thinking,
their northeastern neighbours in red and white stripes as well is pretty much applicable.
We'll talk about them a bit later on. Right now, though, it's time for a little bit of music after what's been a fairly mega part one. And then we'll be back with a little bit more Champions League, actually. Now, Barry, let's talk Spain.
Yeah. Hold on, I'll go and get in the back of a taxi.
Now, all sorts of things happening. There's that transfer ban to discuss, but there's also been some terrific action. Barcelona getting a little bit spooked by Atleti in that quarterfinal at the Camp Nou, New Camp.
Yeah, but that's the fourth time they've played this season, and it's the fourth draw.
Mm.
Is this the fourth 1-1 draw?
I think it.
I think one was 0-0.
Mm. Ah, okay, yeah. Right.
Well. Right. Pow, how about that goal from Diego?
Yeah, it was outstanding. I mean, the way he just got it out of his feet, I think, was it Xavi who was chasing him? And Xavi just, like, you could see from the angle behind the goal, Xavi just looks and just follows it in and is just like.
It was a stupid place to shoot from, to be honest.
Yeah, it was a Diego place to shoot from.
Yeah.
I think he used to do that a lot when he was at Werder Bremen, which is what convinced Juventus to pay 25 million euro for him.
Mm.
And then to play him out of position and for him to flop. But yeah, he's a player certainly capable of that. I mean, on the night, everyone expected it to be Diego Costa who would be the one making the difference. He went off injured after, 28 minutes or whatever. And because of the resolve, the intensity of the aggression that this Atletico team play with, they still managed to get a result. Mm. I think they're an excellent knockout side.
Barcelona's equaliser was also pretty excellent. Oof.
Yeah, Iniesta's pass was probably more impressive than Neymar's finish, but But yeah, that was one of those things where as soon as he's just about to touch the ball to play the pass, you kind of see what he's
thinking. You could see from elsewhere, but how he could see it from where he was running, I'm not entirely sure.
Tim Sherwood could probably see it if he was up in the stands.
Right.
But yeah, that's an evenly poised game, I guess, with Piqué out injured now.
Yeah.
Costa out injured. It's like, what injury is more...
Piqué's got a fractured pelvis, which Shakira won't be happy about at all. No. And he's going to be out for a while.
His hips don't lie, I guess.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Diego Costa very much in doubt for the second leg. Or definitely not there for the second leg.
I'm not aware of the latest, just as I'm not aware of the latest on Ibrahimovic. But that would be a big blow for them, I suspect. Probably more so than...
Right. Well, one or two people raising questions about the value of Pinto in goal and quite what the prospects for Barcelona will be if they have him as their keeper for the next 14 months. But that's entirely the reality that they may be facing because Victor Valdez is supposedly leaving and the fellow they were meant to be getting in, Andre Ter Stegen of Borussia Mönchengladbach, is now very much in doubt because, boom, they've just been hit by FIFA... with a two-session, which is equivalent to a year's transfer ban for having been very, very naughty and bringing in all sorts of underage players in breach of FIFA regulations. Barry, you got a page of notes about this, I think.
I have some notes. Yeah, it's just it's a sordid world of youth trafficking.
All right.
And the regulations are that international transfers are only permitted if players that are over the age of 18. Mm. There are exceptions to the rule. You know, say if your parents have moved to that country for reasons that have nothing to do with your transfer, which sounds like it's open to all sorts of abuse, with player or club setting kids' parents up with jobs or whatever. If players live or move from a country that's less than 50 kilometres of the border that's being crossed, or if the move takes place within the EU when the player is aged between 16 and 18. Mm. But these players, I think there's 10 altogether, but the six in question were, I think, three South Koreans, a couple of Nigerians, and a Cameroonian who's supposed to be excellent altogether. But if these rules had been in place back in...
99,
Messi. They wouldn't have been able to bring Messi over to Spain.
Well, for the Spanish view on all of this, let's now go across to our man in that very country, Sid Lowe. Sid, where are you?
Hello, Jimbo. I mean, I am, as last time, in the back of a taxi.
Hey, it saves on office rental. Excellent stuff.
Doesn't it just? Yeah, yeah. I might actually just buy myself a taxi and fit it out with a laptop.
Right. Well, there was that film, The Cadillac Lawyer, with the very fashionable Matthew McConaughey, which is quite exciting. But you're very much...
I must say, I've never seen it, no.
Yeah, you know, it's quite good, actually, yeah. But you're very much the taxi Spanish correspondent, which could be the title of one of your books, if you want. Anyway, now, Sid, some serious matters. First of all, a terrific game the other night between Atletico and Barcelona, or Barcelona and Atletico.
I'm glad you said that because I think there's a few people who haven't seen it that way, but I really enjoyed it. Mm. I thought it was very, very good. And four games, four draws, set up really nicely for the second leg. And in it all, I think a couple of players that really stood out. Obviously, Thibaut Courtois is one of them, and that's quite exciting for Chelsea fans. And I thought Andres Iniesta was brilliant again. And Iniesta does have a habit of turning it on when it really matters, when it's really big. And I thought he, more than anyone else, was the person who kind of dragged Barcelona back into the game. But it was a game that threw up loads of big question marks,
right,
like the position of Neymar, the weakness at the back for Barcelona, particularly without Piqué, whether or not they can aspire to winning the Champions League with Pinto, because there was a nervousness every time he got the ball at his feet, which, of course, for a Barcelona goalkeeper is quite significant.
And the question being asked about how Barcelona feel about having him in goal for the next 14 months.
Well, that's a really, really big deal because of this FIFA punishment for them. They, of course, had reached an agreement to get Ter Stegen, but the deal prevents them from signing people. Now, a lot of people in Barcelona are saying, well, yeah, but they've already signed him. Nah, it doesn't matter. It's about when you register the player and you would register him. I think I'm right in saying from the 1st of July. I think all contracts end on the 31st of June.
Right.
So he would be registered on the 1st of July. And in theory, at the moment, that couldn't happen. Ter Stegen's agent this morning said, if I've understood the FIFA communique correctly, right now the chances of him going to Barcelona are none.
All right. Well, they're appealing, of course. Two questions. One, do you think their appeal will be successful, as Chelsea's was, in a similar case?
Totally different cases.
Totally
it's very
different.
Bizarre, this. I find it very, very curious that certainly in the first 3 or 4 hours after the story broke, there was a lot of talk in Spain about, but Chelsea did this. Totally different cases, an entirely different approach, entirely different type of accusation, because, of course, this is FIFA against Barcelona before.
Right.
It was Chelsea against another club against Lons. So I don't think that's necessarily a precedent. What Barcelona, I think, are hoping for is that they will make the appeal, and while they're making the appeal, the sentence will be suspended in upwards, giving them the chance to go into the transfer window this summer and then work really, really hard at getting enough players now to be okay if they don't get in the following transfer window. Of course, the other thing is, if they appeal and they don't get suspended in the meantime, then the chances are the appeal will take 6 months, so this summer will be out for them. So they're confronted by a really big problem, at least because they've already got a squad that's a little bit too short.
Yeah, absolutely. In every sense of the word, some would say, Sid.
Well, quite, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
You know, they are mathematically or statistically the shortest squad in Europe.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Well, that's really interesting. You don't paint a particularly positive picture then for their legal chances of overturning it. The other question I had was, to what extent should other clubs now be worried? To what extent were Barcelona's practices mirrored by teams who brought players in from Barcelona or did their own basically poaching from other countries?
Well, the problem is that you've asked me to what extent. I couldn't tell you to what extent. It's very, very hard to give an answer on that. But I think it's unrealistic to make any kind of assumption that other clubs aren't doing similar things, that other clubs aren't picking up young players. AS newspaper yesterday ran a story saying that Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid would be investigated as well. But, of course, investigated is not the same as saying and will be caught or and will be found to have done this. It's also not the same as saying if we're investigating these two clubs, we're not investigating anywhere else. It's only these two.
So to sum up then, Sid, you think they're in big, big trouble in transfer terms and possibly in the Champions League as well?
Well, I think they're in big, big trouble in transfer terms because, you know, this is a squad that you already look at and say there are a couple of key absentees in it, or not key absentees, but key gaps in the squad that are needed to fill, and needed to fill them probably even before this summer. And now if they can't miss summer, that makes it worse. Add to that the fact they're about to lose their goalkeeper, Victor Valdés, so you've got to find a goalkeeper from somewhere, and there were doubts about Pinto, and there were doubts whether Pinto would even continue next year, because, of course, Barcelona were looking for two goalkeepers, the first choice and the second choice.
Wow.
They can't obviously sign either of those now, so I think that does put them in trouble. In terms of the Champions League right now, I wouldn't necessarily say they're in trouble, because, you know, they're theoretically at least 3 games away from a final, but certainly they recognise it wasn't the best result. But Tata Martino did say that his side have been creative enough, certainly more than in the previous 3 games against Atletico Madrid, to be able to be reasonably optimistic about the second leg.
All right. Sid, that's magnificent stuff. We'll catch up with you soon.
Fantastic. Cheers.
Thanks, Sid. Right now, another little interlude and then on to the Premier League.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Hey, cracking midweek action between Roma and Parma, James. Did you catch that? 4-2 game at the Olympico?
Yes. It was a humbling. It was, you know, and it kind of reopens. You could say it reopens the title race to some extent, because Juventus lost to Napoli at the weekend. That was Roma's game in hand. They've yet to play Roma at the Olympico, so we could have a closer title race than we expected.
Yeah, but we're probably not.
Probably not.
But there's some lovely goals in that. Yeah, but right now let's romp away with the Premier League weekend, highlight of which many people would argue is Everton-Arsenal. Arsenal, eh? How the mighty have fallen. Wasn't that long ago they were title contenders. Now they're battling for the very top four survival. They are 4 points ahead of Everton, but Everton have a game in hand on them and will be hosting the Gunners at Goodison this weekend. Everton, in other stats news, have won their last 5 matches. Whereas Arsenal have only won 3 of the last 10 in the Premier League.
Yeah, they played each other recently in an FA Cup match, of course, which was a match of great significance. And Arsenal won fairly comfortably, 4-1, as far as I recall. I saw Everton last weekend at Fulham, and they were pretty poor in the first half. But what they have this season, which they haven't always had in previous seasons, is a strength and depth. And the changes made from the bench turned the game, with the likes of Morales and even Aidan McGeady coming on and to great effect. So they're a team in form. They're quite similar to Arsenal in the way they play in many ways. But with more potency up front at the moment, because Lukaku is in pretty good form, although I'm not convinced he's quite the class that Chelsea would have required this season to spearhead their attack. So, yeah, it'll be a fun game, tough one to call.
Tough one to call indeed. Martinez as well, famous for his late season runs, no? Either winning the FA Cup with Wigan or indeed beating the drop against impossible odds with victories over, as I recall, Arsenal and Man United. Or maybe was it Liverpool in that great run-in they had with Wigan? Fact, hey?
Well, I mean, the momentum is really with them. As you said, they've won their last five games on the bounce. Their home form throughout this season has been excellent. I think they beat Chelsea there. You know, they
Man United as well.
Yep, I think it's going to be hard for Arsenal to turn back this tide, notwithstanding the really quite emphatic result they got in the FA Cup against them. I actually think if you look at Martinez, yeah, his experience now is being part of the furniture in the Premier League. You know, should Arsene Wenger retire one day, I think he would be a very good successor for him at Arsenal in terms of continuity there.
Right. Well, let's move on then to the authors of that battering, which were Liverpool, who are now, of course, top of the table. And very excitingly, if they win all their remaining six games, boom, they are probably the most unexpected Premier League winners ever, I would suggest. I don't think there's anything that would be able to compare with them taking this title. A lot of people had them as outsiders for even the top four, let alone top spot. But having won eight games in a row, this weekend, they're at Upton Park. Now, that which came as a surprise to Brendan Rodgers when he was saying on Saturday night, Hagen 88 making this point, that when he was on Match of the Day 2, on Sunday night, that he said, oh, yeah, we'll take it one game at a time and our next game is against Man City. And the interviewer said, no, it's not. It's West Ham, suggesting he's not actually taking it one game at a time.
No, Rodgers corrected himself, in fairness.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, it was a slip of the tongue.
But Hagen 88 says West Ham's Sam Otola will have that interview slip up on a video loop in the run-up to the Liverpool game. Was he disregarding West Ham? Will that fire up the Hammers?
They certainly will be fired up because Sam Allardyce would love nothing more than to be the manager's currently sort of flavour of the month, because Allardyce continues to nurture this belief that he doesn't get the credit that he deserves for being a tactical genius and out-tacticking everyone else. And it'll be a proper challenge for Liverpool because Allardyce will be well aware of where Liverpool are weak, which is in the air, defending from set pieces and even from open play. They have the weapons to exploit that with Andy Carroll if he's on form, and they'll just lob long balls into the box continually, and Liverpool will have to defend with vigilance for 90 minutes if they're not to concede. They are, of course, capable of scoring more than they concede, even if they do concede, so you'd still fancy them to win, but it'd be by no means easy.
Big game this for Andy Carroll, I'm thinking.
I guess Rodgers has set a lot of stock by saying that, you know, if Liverpool were to win the title this year, a lot of the component parts of it he inherited. But of course West Ham kind of show that no, that's not exactly entirely the case, is it? Because you have Carroll there, you've got Downing there. I mean, they've become a little bit of a kind of a Liverpool cast-off, clear-out club. I think... Could you say that Rodgers has been vindicated in making that decision to, you know, push Carroll out? I'd say so, yes. I mean, obviously contrasting styles, you know. With Rodgers, he perhaps doesn't fit that work, whereas Allardyce, he's kind of the perfect Allardyce forward, isn't he? And he's certainly been excellent in recent weeks. I think he's been the difference in them surviving since he's come back, which they always said he would be, and he's proven to be. There you go.
Shall we just complete the top of the table picture by talking about Man City, who are currently... Ooh, let me get this straight. How many points they're back? I'm going to rustle the paper. Because, of course, Chelsea are 2 points back.
Four behind Liverpool, is it, with two games in hand?
Four behind Liverpool with two games in hand. Spot on, Paul Doyle. How about that?
I should do this for a living.
Yeah. There's no money in it, Paul. But otherwise, fine. They are at home to Southampton. Hey, Southampton have a bit of a history of giving City problems, don't they?
Yeah, well, Southampton can give any team problems, especially unlike Newcastle, who they played last week. And Southampton can't go very much higher or lower in the league. They're kind of marooned mid-table with Newcastle, but they tonked them last weekend because their players are still playing, A, for the sheer love of playing together because they're a really slick outfit, and B, because so many of them are vying for a World Cup spot.
If you were offered a ticket to a Premier League match, a Southampton home game or a Liverpool home game, which would you choose?
Well, it's a good choice because they're definitely been the two most entertaining teams in the league this season. Don't know which I choose.
Yeah, a tough one. Yeah.
No, Liverpool, actually, because Luis Suarez is the best player in the league.
Yeah, all right. But anyway, they're sort of on a roll, Saints. They won three of their last four. And you mentioned all the players who have the various motives, like England shirts and that. Rodriguez has now 15 goals this season. He's really come alive.
Well,
and
you see, if they don't get selected, they'll have to pay £90 for their England shirts.
That's true.
Or just buy a white T-shirt for a pound.
Mm. And draw a badge on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an option, isn't it?
The way some people have been going on, you think they were compulsory uniforms everyone's been forced to buy.
Mm. Well, yeah.
Don't get one.
Okay, that's the title run. Now, somewhere I've got a page about. Aha! The team's at the bottom.
Big Pedro drop.
Indeed, Barry. I've managed to put Hull Swansea on it, although I think that might be stretching it a little bit. They're both 7 points above the bottom three. But I've got a stat here, courtesy of our guest producer this week, producer Pete. James?
I don't know what the stat is.
Oh, are you going to say something, though?
Well, no, I obviously grew up, went to school in Hull, and I remember one of the greatest games I ever went to was when Hull were in the third division, and Swansea were in the third division. This was back in 1997.
Right.
And this game was 7-4.
Wow. To who?
To Hull.
Who scored all those goals?
Well, I remember Dwayne Darby, he got a hat trick, but it was a really close game until about the 65th minute, because it was 1-1, 2-1, 2-2, 3-3, yeah, that sort of thing, and it got to 4-4, and then Hull just kind of pulled away a bit, and that was it. But it's probably the best. Well, I wouldn't say in terms of quality, but probably the most entertaining game I've ever been to.
Right, sounds remarkable. Sounds remarkable.
Yeah. Not sure if we'll see. The most entertaining game you've ever been to, James.
Well, it's funny because when he said that, I was thinking, yeah, I might well be 5-4 Inter against Roma at the Stadio Olimpico on a balmy Thursday evening. I can't remember why it was on a Thursday evening, but it was in Rome, and it was a remarkable.
That
game.
Was when Roy Hodgson had Ronaldo, Baggio.
Yeah, we often talk about it. I think it was the 97, 98, or 98, 99 season, and everybody was playing in that team. It was just ludicrous.
Yeah.
Mine was a 5-4 between Shamrock Rovers and Limerick City in the FAI Cup.
Boom. All right. And yours, Paul?
Probably quite recently, the Arsenal 7-5 win at Reading.
Ah.
Part of the entertainment being seeing all the fellow journalists in the press box smash their computer every time they had to rewrite with the deadline already passed.
Ah, joy. Well, the calls were very late there, weren't they?
Yeah, in extra time.
Mind you, that's that, everybody, that I was mentioning before. Yeah. Did you know Wilfred Boney's got 11 goals for Swansea this year? But after Wilfred Boney, Swansea City's second highest goal scorer is own goals.
He also has possibly the best assist of the season.
Who, Boney?
Yeah, that a little drag back and back heel for de Guzman's goal last week.
Ah, yeah, sumptuous. Right, okay. Well, it was a good goal, isn't it? Yeah. Now, on to the proper relegation stuff, and you got Norwich, who are drifting back into the picture, who are hosting West Brom. Now, West Brom, the books suggest, have won three of their last four visits to Carrow Road, but they're arriving in the midst of a bit of a sticky situation with Saida Berahino, who apparently got smacked by James Morrison. This rumour seems to be backed up by loads of witnesses.
Well, he was going to take him to court, but has decided against it.
Right.
It could be argued that he deserved a smack.
Well... The Daily Mirror says his steadfast refusal to apologise. Basically, he'd given the ball away, which enabled West Brom had taken the lead in time added on. He then had a ball, or just had to head for the corner flag in classic football fashion, but didn't.
Crossed
gave the ball
to the
away.
One defender.
Didn't track back to try and remedy his error. And then his steadfast refusal to apologise in the dressing room sparked a scuffle, which saw Morrison punch Berahino before teammates intervened. A source told Mirror Sport there was a long line of people who were ready to punch So there you go. So it's going to be an interesting atmosphere as they head to that game at Norwich.
It could be something and nothing.
Well, I suppose so. They are just above the bottom three. They are 3 points clear of Cardiff. They do have a game in hand, though, on Cardiff and Fulham, but not on Sunderland. Sunderland, of course, are going to be at Spurs. Spurs are a team in an interesting position, aren't they? What do you think about that game, Barry?
I think Sunderland will probably lose again.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen nothing from them to suggest they're going to pick up points from anyone.
What happened to Poyet and his...
Well, the Secret Footballer had an article on some website yesterday. I can't remember which
was
one.
Was it thesecretfootballer.com?
No, it wasn't his own. It was a guest appearance somewhere else. But his suggestion, and it's a drum he's banged before, is that quite a number of the senior players at Sunderland are rather fond of beer.
Oh.
And perhaps have adopted many of the habits that were the hallmark of more successful teams than them in the past, which is Arsenal and Manchester United.
Have they been back on the ketchup as well?
Well, probably have. Ketchup binges and booze binges. You know, they drink too much, they smoke too much, they don't look after themselves. And they're getting to the point now where it quite clearly looks as if they don't care whether they stay up or not. So why the hell should anyone else?
Mm-hmm. Oh, dear.
Spurs aren't in particularly great fettle themselves at the moment. Suggestions that there's discontent in the dressing room over the sort of uncertain direction been taken under Tim Sherwood. There's some guys who are out of the team who you probably think should be in it, like Paulinho. He seems to have fallen out of favour. I think he's been perhaps the best of their summer signings. Others were certainly questionable. Eriksen has been very good as well, so I should include him. They've got, despite all the money they splurged in the summer, they've got obvious weaknesses in their team, in the fullback positions in particular. I don't know if Sunderland are the team that can exploit that, but it's not the hardest fixture you could face.
Where do you think Tim Sherwood will watch it?
I think that Spurs will win.
Yeah, you think Spurs will win? Yeah.
I think he'll watch it from the stand. I don't see what he has a better view from the stand. He can make a better analysis of the game from the stand. Standing on the sideline and throwing his hands in the air may appeal to certain fans who demand passion, but I don't think it is the secret to success.
Do you think all managers should watch games from the stands? Huh?
I think they should watch games from the place they feel they have the best view from which to make an analysis, and certainly the press box at White Hart Lane is actually right behind the Tottenham dugout, so we have a similar view that Sherwood would have if he was there, and I can see why he watches it from the stand.
Oh really?
It's not great.
But they do it in rugby, don't they? I mean, you often see them up in their booth with their laptops out and that sort of thing. It seems like it's a normal occurrence.
Look at dogs.
Yeah, which dogs Marouane Fellaini resembles. But they do it in other sports. And I think, you know, you do get a better... I mean, if you look at all the analysis that, say, Gary Neville does on Sky, it's always done from the camera which is up high, so you can get a better pitch, a helicopter view. As Brendan Rodgers would call it, to make better judgments. And yeah, I thought it was rather ludicrous that when he came downstairs, I think the commentator, I think it was John Watson, said obviously it's the halftime team talk. He's really got amongst them, but they came out and performed a lot better in the second half. That's probably because of the observations he made from up there up in the stands in the first half, rather than just questioning their pride and prodding them or whatever.
All right, okay. Super. And now, moving along, Cardiff taking on Crystal Palace. Ooh, that's a big game, isn't it? Palace may well have got themselves out of trouble. Cardiff are very much in the thick of it. They are third last and have only won 2 of 12 matches under Solskjaer. What do you think, Barry?
I think they'll lose.
Cardiff, yeah?
Yeah, I think the bottom three at the moment will go down.
All right then.
Sorry. They're just so bad. I mean, and some very bad teams will stay up. It's a funny old thing. They should probably have a mass clear out, get rid of about 6 or 7 teams.
Yeah. That's a thought, isn't it? Wilfried Zahar up against his old club, of course. That would be a big day, in inverted commas, for him.
Well, it will if he selected.
True.
He's not done well at all since going to Cardiff. He's very underwhelming, I think. Apparently Manchester United are prepared to get rid of him. He's up for sale. Anyone, 5 million or nearest offer. And it's remarkable how much his star has waned. There was a suggestion as well that he has certain lifestyle issues that may be distracting from his game. And, you know, it's understandable because he's only a kid. grown up still. But yeah, he needs something to happen to stop the decline of what was a very promising career.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. And speaking of declines and that Fulham bottom of the table, it's now or never as they visit Aston Villa. Which is probably the best place to face Aston Villa, isn't it?
Yeah, and Fulham are playing the best that they have all season. Magath is making a difference. Unfortunately, he is not the Messiah and can't make a big enough difference to save them, I suspect, because they're just a weak team. And all the ridiculous chopping and changing that they've been doing since the start of the season has left them with too much ground to make up. Having said that, they probably have quite a favourable run of fixtures. So it's not altogether impossible. So if somehow they can score enough goals to outweigh all the ones they're bound to concede, they could still survive, but they'll definitely need 3 points at Villa.
Right, well, they're currently 5 points off safety, and they don't have games in hand. In fact, West Brom, who are the first of the teams that are above the drop, have a game in hand on them. So not looking all that good. Anyway, might not be the end yet for Fulham, but it certainly is for today's Football Weekly Extra. We'll be having a pay-per-view of the Champions League reactions, which will be up late Thursday night, Friday morning. So do join me for that. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Paul Doyle, James Horncastle and Barry Glendinning, and special guest producer Pete today. And enjoy the weekend. We're back on Monday. Bye, everybody.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today. No credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.